Sentimental Education, The History of a Young Man by Gustave Flaubert. Volume 1, Chapter 1, A Promising Pupil. On the 15th of September, 1840, about 6 o'clock in the morning, the Ville de Montereau, just on the point of starting, was sending forth great whirlwinds of smoke in front of the Quai Saint Bernard. People came rushing on board in breathless haste. The traffic was obstructed by casks, cables, and baskets of linen. The sailors answered nobody. People jostled one another. Between the two paddle boxes was piled up a heap of parcels, and the uproar was drowned in the loud hissing of the steam, which, making its way through the plates of sheet iron, enveloped everything in a white cloud, while the bell at the prow kept ringing continuously. At last, the vessel set out, and the two banks of the river, stocked with warehouses, timber yards, and manufactories, opened out like two huge ribbons being unrolled. A young man of 18, with long hair, holding an album under his arm, remained near the helm without moving. Through the haze he surveyed steeples, buildings of which he did not know the names. Then, with a parting glance, he took in the Isle St. Louis, the site, Notre Dame, and presently, as Paris disappeared from his view, he heaved a deep sigh. Frederick Moreau, having just taken his bachelor's degree, was returning home to Nogent-sur-Seine, where he would have to lead a languishing existence for 2 months before going back to begin his legal studies. His mother had sent him, with enough to cover his expenses, to Havre to see an uncle, from whom she had expectations of his receiving an inheritance. He had returned from that place only yesterday, and he indemnified himself for not having the opportunity of spending a little time in the capital by taking the longest possible route to reach his own part of the country. The hubbub had subsided. The passengers had all taken their places. Some of them stood warming themselves around the machinery, and the chimney spat forth with a slow, rhythmic rattle its plume of black smoke. Little drops of dew trickled over the copper plates. The deck quivered with the vibration from within, and the two paddle wheels, rapidly turning round, lashed the water. The edges of the river were covered with sand. The vessel swept past rafts of wood which began to oscillate under the rippling of the waves, or a boat without sails in which a man sat fishing. Then the wandering haze cleared off, the sun appeared, the hill which ran along the course of the Seine to the right subsided by degrees, and another rose nearer on the opposite bank. It was crowned with trees, which surrounded low-built houses, covered with roofs in the Italian style. They had sloping gardens divided by fresh walls, iron railings, grass plots, hothouses, and vases of geraniums, laid out regularly on the terraces where one could lean forward on one's elbow. More than one spectator longed, on beholding those attractive residences which looked so peaceful, to be the owner of one of them, and to dwell there till the end of his days with a good billiard table, a sailing boat, and a woman or some other object to dream about. The agreeable novelty of a journey by water made such outbursts natural. Already the wags on board were beginning their jokes. Many began to sing. Gaiety prevailed, and glasses of brandy were poured out. Frederick was thinking about the apartment which he would occupy over there, on the plan of a drama, on subjects for pictures, on future passions. He found that the happiness merited by the excellence of his soul was slow in arriving. He declaimed some melancholy verses. He walked with rapid step along the deck. He went on till he reached the end at which the bell was, and, in the center of a group of passengers and sailors, he saw a gentleman talking soft nothings to a countrywoman while fingering the gold cross which she wore over her breast. He was a jovial blade of 40, with frizzled hair. His robust form was encased in a jacket of black velvet. Two emeralds sparkled in his cambric shirt, and his wide, white trousers fell over odd-looking red boots of Russian leather set off with blue designs. The presence of Frederick did not discompose him. He turned round and glanced several times at the young man with winks of inquiry. He next offered cigars to all who were standing around him. But getting tired, no doubt, of their society, he moved away from them and took a seat further up. Frederick followed him. The conversation, at first, turned on the various kinds of tobacco, then quite naturally it glided into a discussion about women. The gentleman in the red boots gave the young man advice. He put forward theories, related anecdotes, referred to himself by way of illustration, and he gave utterance to all these things in a paternal tone, with the ingenuousness of entertaining depravity. He was Republican in his opinions. He had traveled. He was familiar with the inner life of theaters, restaurants, and newspapers, and knew all the theatrical celebrities, whom he called by their